ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day, welcome to the program. My name's Fiona Broom. Lovely to have your company this lunchtime. I've got plenty of rural news ahead for you on today's Country Hour. The National Farmers Federation, that organisation hopes to soon have an interim CEO to fill the gap after the chief executive left the organisation just 4 months into the job. With the NFF president and board terms set to expire, what's going to happen over the next couple of months for the National Agriculture Body? You'll hear more on that ahead on the show today. And I'll take you to Bloodwood Station for the latest on the bushfire that's been burning near Mataranka for more than a week. All that and more coming up on the Country Hour today. But first, a new fruit fly management protocol that is both nationally and internationally recognised has been agreed ahead of this year's mango harvest. My guest on the Country Hour today is Sally Heaton, Chief Plant Health Officer for the Northern Territory. Sally, we've had some wonderful news. Northern Territory mangoes will be going to Western Australia this season. What are the details of this new interstate certification assurance that has just been signed?
Yes, it is wonderful news. As many listeners would know, over the last couple of years, the mango season for access into Western Australia has been a little bit uncertain with a few changes that have happened with chemical treatments and pathway. But what we've managed to do in time for this upcoming season is to have our agreement, which was used to be known as CTM01 for Western Australia, approved and endorsed as what's known as a Interstate Certification Assurance Protocol. So for growers on the ground, it's still the same process, but it's a nationally endorsed certification assurance protocol that's been approved by a national committee. It's recognised. And it gives us some long-term sustainability for access into Western Australia.
What are the treatment processes or the treatment pathways for growers under this certification assurance?
Yeah, so what this is, so it will be known as ICA 69. They give them numbers at the end. And growers are quite familiar with ICAs. They have them for quite a number of other crops for sending or domestically. So what this is, it's a pre-harvest spray. So they have to spray their mangoes in the field for about 5 weeks before harvest. And it's all to reduce fruit fly because we've got Queensland fruit fly. Western Australia doesn't. So pre-harvest sprays. Then when they pick the mangoes, pick them in a hard, mature condition. Some inspections and some recording that they've got to do to inspect pieces of fruit. And they've got to be of Class 1 quality, so that's no defects on them. And there's a little bit of a guidance there, so fruit flies can't penetrate and lay their larvae into the mangoes. It's something that the growers do very well. They've been working under this same system. It's called a systems approach for a number of years for accessing South Australia, so it's something they're very familiar with.
And this new agreement has been a couple of years in the making now. Take us back to 2023 and what kicked all of this off.
Back in 2023, we had the same system, but you could have what they call a post-harvest dip. So in 2023, the Australian Pesticides Veterinary Medicines Authority, APVMA, which is a Commonwealth department that regulates all chemicals, they banned the use of dimethylate on mangoes, and they did it right at the beginning of our mango season, which was not very nice of them. So we had to pivot very quickly. Mango growers all of a sudden who had contracts signed with suppliers in Western Australia couldn't send, so they had to find alternative treatments. We were able to negotiate and get that decision delayed a little bit so they could send for the bulk of the season. There are other things that growers can use. They can use vapor heat treatment. There is a facility here in Darwin that does that, but it's not big enough to take the entire NT crop, which is a problem. They can also go via Brisbane or Melbourne and get irradiation, which is very cost prohibitive, of course. So we had to sort of shuffle to get through that season. For last season, what happened, another alternative treatment was methyl bromide. They could also fumigate mangoes. But last season, at the beginning of that, some science came out and they banned the use of fumigation of methyl bromide on mangoes and said it wasn't efficacious. So that knocked out another treatment program that our growers could use. So it was like, okay. So we came up with negotiated a deal with Western Australia to use this CTM01 protocol, which they hadn't used before, and they agreed to do that on a trial period. So that was good for last season. We did have some issues through the season where Western Australia did suspend us partway through the season and stopped the trial because they weren't happy with the way some things were going. Again, we were able to negotiate and sort of get the rest of the season happening and give them some assurances. But when we went this season and said, can we please continue the trial of this process, they said, no, we want it to be a nationally endorsed ICA. So we had to do some submissions to a national committee. It gets assessed by all the jurisdictions. We didn't have any real assurances that it would be approved or that it would be approved in time for the season. So we were very ecstatic when we found out late last week that it was going to be endorsed.
It does seem to have been quite a quick decision-making process for the bureaucratic system. Who ultimately signed off on this agreement?
In plant biosecurity, there is a whole national system. All the jurisdictions for domestic market access do work very closely together. So it's a committee called the Subcommittee on Market Access, Risk and Trade. So that's made up of all the jurisdictions, including the Commonwealth, and it's based on scientific rigour. So we had to do like a HACCP analysis of risk assessments, scientific data, put it all together in a package, and then they each assess it individually with their own jurisdiction sort of risk profile in mind and see if it stands up to rigour. So part of the issue was I didn't know how long that was going to take, and because everyone, this committee, it's not a standalone, they're all just people who work in the departments, like you said, bureaucrats, you don't know how long sometimes. But we must have given them enough evidence, they had enough faith in us. They've seen that we've used the protocol for quite a number of years with South Australia with no issues, and they were very happy to support.
So is it all mango varieties that are grown in the Northern Territory that will be covered by this agreement, or is it just some of the varieties to begin with?
So it's just the four major varieties to Western Australia at this stage, Honeygold R2E2, Calypso and Kensington Pride at this stage. That's what we had data for. All varieties of mangoes can still be sent to South Australia under CTM01, but for Western Australia, it's just the four varieties at this stage. We will be looking to see if we can get some of those other green varieties added to it, but that just takes a little bit of time and research and money. So,
what volume of mangoes are going from the Northern Territory to Western Australia each year?
Look, that's a little bit harder to quantify. Like, we know that our mango crop produces 52% of the nation's mangoes. There's a large bulk that go to Western Australia. I can't really give you a figure, but it's a very important market, that and South Australia.
So good news for Northern Territory growers. Good news, I imagine, also for WA mango eaters. They'll be able to access Northern Territory mangoes this season.
Absolutely. And they want our mangoes. There's no doubt about it. You know, it's weighing up their risk of getting Queensland fruit fly, which they don't want. And they've got a current outbreak at the minute that they're trying to manage, with getting our mangoes, which they definitely want. So, you know, it's good that we're able to have this ICA in place, it gives us certainty for the incoming years, so people can, all our growers can plan forward. It's just really good news.
And Sally Heaton, I imagine you and others in the industry have been extremely busy over the past couple of months doing a bit of behind the scenes work. I'm sure everyone's looking forward to getting stuck into the season.
Yes, absolutely. Although it doesn't stop. So what the next sort of steps are is, so like I said, South Australia will still accept CTM01, so for all our mango varieties, but next year they would like to be added to this new ICA 69 as well. So we'll make another submission to do that. So instead of growers having to follow two procedures, one for Western Australia, one for South Australia, we'll work on for next season, so they only have to make one application for one procedure. So just streamlining the admin and reducing a bit of the burden on the growers.
And how is this season looking right now across the Northern Territory for mangoes?
I've been to the mango pre-season roadshows in Darwin, down in Katherine, and talking in the last couple of days and talking to some of the growers down there, and they all seem very excited about the upcoming season. I think the weather's helping them out. The trees look like they're in flower. And it's just one less thing by having this ICA in place that they have to worry and think about. They can just get on with the job of growing and packing good mangoes.
Absolutely. Sally Heaton, Chief Plants Health Officer for the Northern Territory, thank you for your time on the Country Hour today.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Minutes to 1 o'clock here on the Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you this afternoon. Many thanks to the NT's Chief Plant Health Officer, Sally Heaton, for bringing us up to speed on the new fruit fly management protocols with Western Australia. And as Sally Heaton mentioned, mango growers have held their annual pre-season roadshows this week. Australian Mangoes CEO Trevor Dunmore was at yesterday's roadshow in Katherine. He said growers were thrilled with the new agreement.
It means that they have a relatively simple, but still a relatively simple process to export fruit into Western Australia. For a number of growers in both Queensland and especially Northern Territory, the West Australian market's a really important market, and this allows them to get fruit in there as they have done in the past. Until now, there was still a sense of unknown and not sure whether the protocol would be approved, but now it's, you know, over the line. At least growers can get on doing what they do best, and that's growing high-quality mangoes. We would obviously like to see easier and simpler protocols into some of the other markets internationally, but that's a longer-term process.
That's Trevor Dunmore from Australian Mangoes. And grower Marie Piccone sends about 20% of her Mandaloo mangoes to Western Australia. Here's what she had to say about the new fruit fly management agreement.
Well, I'm just so relieved that we're going to have access to the West Australian, to West Australia. And I think there's a lot of mango lovers in West Australia. They're probably quite relieved as well, because a lot of fruit does come from the Territory and from the east coast of Australia to service the demand in West Australia. And it's an important market to us.
And in terms of the varieties and the conditions on the ICA, what are your thoughts on that?
We would eventually like to see the varieties that are allowed extended. And is it enough? I think there's some really good research work showing that mature green mangoes, especially KPs, are not susceptible to fruit fly. But until the West Australian government has comfort with that, then we'll accept what they want us to do. There's always been an arrangement for fruit fly treatment into West Australia, and it's just that the arrangement and the conditions have changed. So we're getting them in by following the government guidelines, by following the protocol. Over the years, the West Australian market's been a thriving, growing market, so there's been expansion, increasing demand, so it would be a really terrible shame to cut that off at the knees right now. So I'm feeling very relieved.
That's mango grower Marie Piccone. She was speaking with Christine Schindler at the Katherine Mango Roadshow yesterday. Barry Doran was also there in Katherine. He's the tropical sales manager for a Perth-based distributor. And he says the demand in Western Australia for Territory mangoes is only growing.
The AMI field day, which is all about getting to meet some growers, seeing what their challenges are going forward and what challenges they've already had, and just basically sourcing more product for WA markets.
And why does WA markets want Northern Territory produce?
Well, the challenge we're having at this time of year, Kununurra's volumes are really falling away. A lot of the big farms have gone now, so there's a lot of small growers growing product. But logistic-wise, as far as packing sheds, there's less and less packing sheds going forward. So it's a real challenge for us to get any volume enough to sustain what we need in WA.
And so you've come to Northern Territory and Katherine to look for it?
Yeah, predominantly Katherine. We've got fruit out of Darwin as well previously. We find that the Katherine fruit is probably higher level quality compared to some of the Darwin fruit we've seen over the last 5 years. So that's why we come to Katherine.
Today they announced that there's a new ICA coming into effect. How has that affected you, what's your reaction to that news?
I think it's good news for the growers that want to come in from Katherine. There was some challenges and some hiccups last season because it was brought in pretty late during the season, so it really caused a few headaches. But now we've got some groundwork to sort of work from base level to go, okay, well, this is what we need to do to tick off the boxes. So, yeah, I think it'll be potentially for the Katherine growers that want us in the WA, definitely a bonus.
And what do you see as one of the opportunities between WA and Northern Territory growers?
Just the volume. I mean, as the smaller growers, we probably average maybe 20 pellets a week out of Kununurra, whereas you get 20 pellets out of one grower in Katherine. So consistency of volume is probably the biggest factor into WA. That's what we need.
And what might be some of the challenges ahead?
Logistics. Freight costs are always the biggest challenge on anything, whether it's going from here to Sydney or from here to Perth. But the freight challenge is one of the biggest ones. Cost of production is another one. So you've got to get a premium price to come to WA. Otherwise, it's just not worth it for them.
That's Perth-based fresh produce distributor Barry Doran. He was speaking with Christine Schindler at the pre-season Mango Roadshow in Katherine yesterday. So just repeating, a new interstate certification assurance for fruit fly management has been agreed. So Northern Territory mangoes will be going into Western Australia when those mangoes start coming off the trees.
Hi, my name is Tom Boyakafai. I'm working at Northern Territory in Country Farm, Mambulu Farm, and you're listening to Country Hour.
Minutes to 1 o'clock here on the Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you this afternoon. In just a moment, you'll find out what will be happening at the National Farmers Federation over the next couple of months. The organisation's CEO recently resigned after just a few months in the job. State and industry organisations have said they plan to leave the Federation. So what's ahead over the next couple of months? More on that very soon. Big River from Johnny Cash there. 10 minutes to 1 here on the Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you this afternoon, filling in for Matt Brann, having a bit of a rest after his big day at the Kimberley Cotton Gin on Monday. If you missed that show or any others, you can catch up on the ABC Listen app. You can also send me a text via the Listen app or the text line number 0487 991057. Well, the National Farmers Federation is meeting this week to discuss productivity in agriculture, but the organisation is also trying to forge a path forward after what I think you could probably pretty safely call a very rocky year. In April, New South Wales farmers gave notice that that organisation would resign from the NFF. The Victorian Farmers Federation did the same thing last year. And the NFF is again searching for a new chief executive after Troy Williams resigned just 4 months into the job. NFF President David Johinke, he has just a couple of months left in his term, but he told Warwick Long that he's pushing ahead with his plans over the next couple of months.
The term of the president finishes at the end of the AGM. So for me, that's on the 24th of October. So I will have a new president announced, a new board released, and they'll take over the reins and continue to push forward for agriculture.
And that's the end of your term on the board as well. Is that right?
Well, we'll have been on the board at the NFF for 12 years, which is the constitutional limit. But then also served at Victoria in the VFF for over 10 years too. So I'll be able to go back and just be a normal farmer again.
So you're 2 months and 2 weeks from the finish line.
Hopefully resolving a few issues and kicking a few more goals and just trying to do what I can to make it easy for the next person.
Yeah, so you're nearly gone. The state organisations are still sort of in disagreement over how much they should be paying for how much power and influence they have at the NFF board, and now you don't have a CEO.
We've about to get an interim CEO in place. Timing isn't ideal on this, but you've got to work with the cards that you get dealt with, and we're trying to do the best we can underneath the circumstances, noting that we still are pushing a reform process, going to hopefully present some options to the members' council where they can make some informed decisions, and then once again, allowing the next board to be able to navigate some of these trickier issues without having that uncertainty from the membership.
Okay, so who's acting CEO right now?
At the moment, I've got the seat, the dual roles of chair and acting CEO. I've also got some excellent support from key staff within the organisation. And we are, once again, in the process of putting in an interim CEO that will get us past both the election and then the recruitment process of a permanent CEO.
So the new president will appoint the CEO, well, the new president and new board?
Absolutely. That's the best governance, and we adhere to that.
The last person that took on the interim CEO job is now the CEO of the Victorian Farmers Federation. Does that make your job more difficult at the national level?
Once again, we've got a great team of people that work within agriculture, and to be quite frank, you've got to work with everybody, regardless of any position, but I've got a really great working relationship with Charlie and the Victorian Farmers Federation team, noting that's where my DNA is as well. And we've got to resolve any issues that come our way. So, yes, there's some pinch points across the family, the membership, but that's the challenge that we have in any association, that we have to overcome that. And really, to work as a federation means that we have to take on all those points of views and come up with the best solution. This is just a challenge of almost any business when you look at how you deal with members and how you make sure you're giving members satisfaction and value.
So you're on the clock. You've got just a little over 2 months to go. The new CEO won't be appointed by the time you leave, but also New South Wales and Victoria both have their intentions to leave, their 12-month notice to leave the National Farmers Federation. Can you resolve this in the last 2 months?
Warwick, every challenge is a solution, and we're trying to do our best to work through those key issues that have been raised by those members. We'll do whatever is practicable, but once again, we're trying to clean up as many issues as we can for the next board to be able to get a clean slate and work forward, and I'm just going to do my darndest in the time I've got.
Do you worry you'll be remembered for a mess that gets left behind?
Oh, thanks for that question, Warwick. I don't think that's quite the case, but I see things slightly different to that, but I'll let history judge be the judge. But we're trying to fight every day for Australian farmers and give them a win where what means most to them, and that's keeping them productive and keeping them able to run their businesses.
All right, tell me about this productivity in Australian agriculture in Brisbane today. What are you trying to do?
Well, this roundtable is specifically talking about how can we get more efficiency for Australian agriculture and ensuring that we have got a very clear message to take to the second round of roundtables, which is where the nation comes together collectively to look at a vision. We've essentially been discussing two main themes, and that is around regulation and productivity in the sense of production. Yes, there's some ground here that we've probably sawed some sawdust on in my tenure involved in advocacy, but to reiterate those issues and probably contemporize them to say, well, how do we get best cost effectiveness out of the department? How do we ensure that we're removing as much duplication as possible in regulation? But then also, how do we ensure that state, federal efficiency of having those different departments, having those different visions actually align to take the burden off of farmers doing what we do every day? And that's either trying to make it easy for us or get out of our way.
In terms of this looking at productivity in agriculture, then there's this economic forum coming, being run by the Australian government. You'll represent the NFF there and a large part of agricultural's voice at that table, right? What's your biggest concern in terms of either more taxes or otherwise?
Well, we have got a concern that some of this discussion's jumping straight to taxation and not productivity. And as agriculture today is, we've wanting to ensure that we keep that in check and focus more on how can we ensure that regulation is reviewed in a timely manner and actually have some deadlines to remove some of those either inefficiencies or duplications that were raised today. We're talking about infrastructure and the nation building attributes that that has beyond agriculture to say tourism, education, even health rely on the same systems as what agriculture does. If you want to build a nation, you've got to look at the bigger picture, and then agriculture will benefit from that. But essentially, if you're talking about productivity and taxation, the more you produce, the more you've got opportunity to clip the ticket on. Let's actually focus on that instead of just trying to tax people out of existence. So we are very much focused on building the pie so that you can hang and do more things off of that, putting more pressure on the current system that we find either agriculture or rural communities.
That's the National Farmers Federation president and also the current acting CEO, David Johinke, speaking there with Warwick Long. David Johinke's time with the organisation coming to an end in just a couple of months. As you heard there, he's still hoping to get some work done while he's in the job. And the organisation on the hunt for a CEO at the moment. They're looking for an interim chief executive while they search for a permanent chief in the job.
Adds colour and life to your garden. Get tips on growing classic annuals, flannel flowers, potted fruit trees, blueberries and bird-friendly plants. It's all in Gardening Australia magazine from newsagents and abcmagazines.com.au.
My name's Shelby.
And my name's Annalise.
And we're growing vegetables and herbs at our school's garden.
You are listening to the Country Hour.
Coming up to 1 o'clock here on the Country Hour, Fiona Broom with you this afternoon. Still plenty to come after 5 minutes past one. We'll have a chat with the Weather Bureau. I'll let you know what's happening with that fire burning near Mataranka that's been burning through some cattle stations there over the past week. I'm also going to take you to the newest rodeo in Australia. Do stick around. 1 o'clock on your ABC.
Yeah, g'day, how you going? My name's Jason Moon, owner of NT Tropical Passion Fruit. We're on the farm today, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Thanks, Jason. You are listening to the Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you this afternoon. Matt Brand having a little bit of a break this week. Now, this half hour, I'm going to take you to Australia's newest rodeo. It's something a little bit different in the rodeo scene. I'm excited to take you there. You'll also find out what's happening near Mataranka. There has been a fire burning to the west for about a week now. We'll find out what's happening in the work that's being done to contain that fire. Time to check in now with the Weather Bureau. Billy Lynch with us this afternoon. G'day, Billy.
G'day, Fiona.
It's all about the ridges this week, Billy.
It is all about the ridges, which is not unusual for this time of year.
Tell me what's happening. Has that new ridge come through as expected?
Yeah, it has. Yeah, so the high centre is sitting down near Adelaide at the moment, 1,031 hectopascals. And yeah, it's the dominant weather pattern across the Northern Territory. So what we've seen today is an increase in those southeasterly winds, principally through the Barkly and then up into parts of the Gregory and the VRD country. So we saw Tennant Creek have a wind gust of around 57 k's per hour, I think. And at Victoria River Downs, around 50 k's per hour, but also seen a bit of an increase in the winds further north across the top end and around that Mataranka, Katherine area that you mentioned.
Yes. In just a moment, we are going to hear from Clayton Dean, who's just west of Mataranka. He's been putting in fire breaks to help out neighbouring stations where that fire has been burning for about a week. Billy, what can you tell folks there who are working on that fire? What can you tell them about what's going to be happening over the next 24 hours particularly?
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of the wind direction, pretty predictable. It's going to be those east to southeasterly winds. Based on the Tyndall rough base observations, just in the last few hours, we've seen winds of around 25 k's per hour, gusting to 40. So, certainly breezy. The humidity levels, yesterday we were talking about the single figure dew points. So they have increased. Dew point at Tyndall's around 13, 14. So humidity up a little bit, but still on the dry side. Relative humidity around 40%. So for the rest of today, as we move into the afternoon, we should see that the wind strengths ease off, probably back down to around 10 k's per hour or so for the evening. But I mentioned that surge in southeasterly winds through the Barkly and the VRD at the moment. Mm. So that's going to push up into the top end from tomorrow morning. So there will be, tomorrow's going to be a windier day, basically, through that fire ground compared to today. Tomorrow morning and, well, into the early afternoon, there'll be some quite gusty east-southeasterly winds through that area.
Okay. Hopefully that doesn't cause too many problems for folks working on the fire there. What about further south, down around Alice Springs? How are things looking there?
Yeah, good. I mean, sunny, not too cold, not too hot. Temperatures are pretty much bang on average for August. So, Alice Springs is currently 22 degrees, shooting for a top of around 24. Not much more to really add through Central Australia. It's just
holding
gradually
steady.
Warming up. Yeah, steady. And there'll be a cool change come through on Saturday. But between now and then, very nice weather through there.
What's happening around Darwin? Are there some remarkable weather events at the moment?
I guess whenever we get a night below 20, we could say that that's remarkable. So this morning we got down to 17.5 at Darwin Airport.
Wow.
So that gives us another night below 20. It ticks us up to 39 nights for the dry season. And last dry season we had 38. So we've gone one better than last year. And there's a very good chance we'll get a few more before the dry season's over.
Does it still seem that the humidity is fairly high, though? I think the dew point's back up around 20 or so.
Yeah, that's right. So because that southeasterly surge that I mentioned hasn't quite reached the top end yet, we're still getting the sea breezes. So that means the humidity is up a bit. Current dew point in Darwin is 15. So
yeah, it's all right.
Fairly pleasant. But do expect for probably most of the evenings this week, weak sea breezes pushing in. So, yeah, it may feel a little bit more humid if you're living around the coast.
I don't think there's any warnings out currently for the Northern Territory, Billy?
No, there's no warnings. Probably the closest thing to a warning is just the fire danger. So for today, it's high fire danger through the Barkly, the Gregory and the Darwin and Adelaide River area. Tomorrow, the fire danger will increase across the top end just because of the stronger southeasterlies. So we're not expecting to issue a fire weather warning, but there will be a spike in sort of higher fire danger, particularly around Darwin and Adelaide River tomorrow.
All righty. We will check in with the Bureau again tomorrow. Billy Lynch, thanks for your time this afternoon.
No worries. Thank you.
Billy Lynch there at the Bureau of Meteorology.
Hi, I'm Amanda and I work as a relief store manager for Outback Stores.
And hi, I'm Andy and I'm also relief store manager for Outback Stores.
And we love listening to the Country Hour
whilst here at Tilmouth Well.
Twelve minutes past one on the Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you this afternoon. I've had a message on the text line 0487 991057. Angus complimenting my music choices from earlier in the program. He says that Johnny Cash song suits the program perfectly. Johnny Cash is alive and well. Many thanks for your message, Angus. If you do want to get in touch, 0487 991057, or you can send me a text message through the ABC Listen app. Well, cattle work has come to a halt at stations west of Mataranka, where a bushfire has been burning for more than a week. Clayton Dean runs Bloodwood Station, which neighbours Lakefield Station, where about 10,000 hectares have burnt out. Clayton says it's been all hands on deck to get fire breaks in place over the past couple of days.
Oh, it started last Tuesday. I got a call. I was on another neighbouring property grading there, and I got a phone call saying that with the smoke coming from the rail line. So my son-in-law ripped down to the rail line and had a look, and sure enough, it was there. He tried to beat it out with some leaves, and it beat him, and then they got some water, and they got back to it, but by then it had jumped the rail line and then got into the western side of the rail line, which doesn't have a break there, and then it got into Lakefield. And then from there on, we were they fighted that to 12 o'clock that night. They thought I had it beat, and then it jumped into Gary's second paddock, and then they end up pulling up there at midnight. And, and ever since then, we've just sort of been running around getting more breaks in. Currently, I've got my son on the grader at the moment. He's on Mambaloo on the Lakefield boundary grading that, and we did neighbouring property of Neenan yesterday. And we're just waiting for these other neighbouring properties to get their breaks in line, and I think we'll be back burning by tomorrow night.
So a busy few days at your place then, Clayton?
Yeah, it sort of just puts everything else on hold. We're meant to be sending cattle or drafting this Sunday and sending cattle, and we've had to postpone it because we don't know whether or not we're going to be here to do it. You can't just, turn the fire off and go to that, so we've had to postpone it. Number of other things as well. Oh, luckily it hasn't touched any of our land, but we've got, we're back on to Mambaloo. We've got 9 kilometres of Mambaloo there, so we just want to make sure all the brakes are up to scratch, and hopefully we shouldn't have any drama. But, it's a bit of a shame for Mambaloo. They're not going to end up with a lot of country left. We tried to pull it up earlier and thought we had it beaten, and after 3 days it got to go on again, so that's why we've had to prepare this side. And bushfires are flat out fighting the northern side because that's where the fire's heading. Our side's sort of just trickling to us, like it will get to us. As long as it doesn't turn around, we end up getting a northeasterly, I think we'll be right.
Yeah, which direction is it moving currently?
Southeast. The wind's blowing southeast at the moment, so it's heading sort of straight, sort of northwest sort of thing. Like the winds ain't too bad today. They're sort of dying down a bit. Hopefully they just stay, as long as they don't pick up flat out, hopefully they should be able to get them fires under control, but it is pretty dry this time of year.
Yeah, is a fire at this time of year on your property or near your property, is that sort of unusual?
Yeah, you sort of don't normally, not around here anyway, we sort of don't get too many fires around this time of year, only when it's, you start getting a few lightning strikes. But obviously when you start getting a few lightning strikes, the wet season's not far around the corner, so it's not too bad. A bit early in the year to get burned out now.
Did you have the majority of your fire prep in place, or have you had to sort of scrabble to get some of your breaks in now that this fire is nearby?
Oh, just widening up a few breaks. I had everything already graded, and, my main grade is... It's over at Sunday Creek at the moment doing a bit there. But, I've got an old grader here, and, we're just getting around doing the inside of Mambaloo, just prepping that up and widening out our break, and, just to help a few neighbouring properties. And, just so stop it getting in any further into anybody else.
Clayton, thanks for your time. All the best. I hope you do manage to get it under control over the next sort of 24 hours or so.
No worries at all. Thank you.
Do you know a young person with a story to tell?
AY is a chance to
tell our stories on a national platform.
Go to Canberra, go out, make change.
And be heard.
Enter by September 1st.
abc.net.au/haywire.
Many thanks to Clayton Dean at Bloodwood Station for letting us know what's happening out there with that bushfire. Down the road from Clayton's place, Brad Inglis at Sturt Plains Station is being kept busy by the high demand for burger patties in the US. Brad has been selling truckloads of cattle to southern processors, and he told Christine Schindler his dipping yards have also been flat out.
Yeah, just trucking some cows here. These are heading to Scone in New South Wales of other people's, and then the next truck's going to Victoria. And just got to go and muster some more fat cows in, and we'll start selling some. We just finished our mustering our breeders, which has been a bit drawn out, but the cattle are in good condition. We pulled all the weaners off and got them in the yards. But yeah, we operate a dipping facility here, so that's been constant all year, and trying to find a window to get our own stuff done has been a bit of a challenge. But yeah, there's been some huge numbers heading south and east, and I think there's big demand for the grinding meat exports, like the 90CL grinding meat, which is like for your hamburgers and all that in America. Like, there's a huge demand for that, and America's herd's a bit depleted and still parts of drought. Been over there for a long time. So, yeah, it's all looking pretty strong for everyone up here.
And has that been different from last year's?
Probably the cow demand's there, but it's huge at the moment. Like, big numbers heading, and every year we seem to sort of saying, oh, we'll be right, it'll slow down, but it doesn't seem to. And, there's a lot of cattle on the move and have been since, April, May, Anyway, it's good, we'll get it done.
It's been very busy for you then.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. The staff have been great. The girls I've got here and, they're all sort of looking at me, when are we going to get a day off? But it'll come soon. But, yeah, even getting the bulk of this work done in the cool weather, it's just, it's really good. I think it'll be stinking hot soon. Everyone will be whinging, so I don't mind it. But it's just harder for your cows and calves and all that kind of stuff. So I try and get all that other stuff done in the cool with the cattle and then usually, and I know it sounds weird, but usually we go fencing and do all that stuff out in the heat, which doesn't seem to be right, but it's all right. Hopefully the fires sort of, I know there's a few people battling a few fires up around Mataranga that were lit on the railway corridor, but they poor buggers a bit early for all that.
And are you doing anything to prepare your station fires?
Oh, yeah, every year we do fire breaks and grades, and we sort of burn parts of, like, along the highway. We're on the highway, so that always seems to start fires along there. But, no, it's just your fire breaks and keep an eye out, eh? Every year it's the same thing. But, yeah, a bit of a fuel load this year, so I think everywhere. So it'll be interesting to see next little bit.
And if you could click your fingers and have the best next season, what would that look like?
Me sitting in a fishing boat.
What are you looking forward towards? Are you going to get a break soon?
Yeah, we will. I think, yeah, I'll get this bulk of this done and, yeah, get a window here and there. And the weather might come good a little bit. And, I think all this mob here I've been promising them to take in fishing, so we'll get there eventually.
It's Brad Inglis from Sturt Plains Station. He was speaking with Christine Schindler. Just gone 20 minutes past one here on the Country Hour. Fiona Broom with you this afternoon. Matt Brandt's somewhere. I'm sure he's got a line in somewhere, having a good old time this afternoon. In just a moment, I'll take you to the newest rodeo event to hit the national circuit. Stay tuned to the Country Hour. That's our Sara Stora with Night After Night, coming up to 24 minutes past one here on the Country Hour. Well, a brand new rodeo has hit the national circuit. It's been held in an Aboriginal town in Western Australia's northwest, and the organisers are hoping their event will be a little bit different to the other rodeos. The Country Hour's Georgia Hardgraves headed along to learn more.
This isn't just any rodeo. It's Roeburn's first rodeo. The outback town in Western Australia is more than 1,500 kilometres north of Perth. Rodeo co-founder and champion cowgirl Tui Magner managed to juggle organising the event and winning the title for barrel racing on the day. Tui Magner says after years of planning, it was great to see the rodeo come to life.
Rodeos are really popular in WA alone. They have a really, really strong following. So we're really focused on bringing a really family-friendly event that is putting Roeburn in a real positive spotlight. We started the club about 4 years ago with myself and Brian Tucker. He is a Bunjima elder, very highly respected cultural man. So, yeah, it's been a beautiful journey just setting up the club and trying to run a community-friendly event.
As you just heard, event organiser Brian Tucker is a well-respected traditional owner in WA's Pilbara region. And he says he has been dreaming of this day for years.
Very exciting, you know, especially when you say something on YouTube and you're going to do it. Well, you do it for a right reason because you can see these potential things can happen in a community with everybody involving and putting their hands together and making it happen. I wanted to do this a long, long time ago, but to see how I've got to fit it all in to make it happen. And, you know, especially when you have good people and other people that you meet that want your dream to come together, because the purpose is there for everybody to become a part of. It's about making the community involvement. It's about putting back into the community and making people to know there's a way you can do things and help each other, especially a town like Rowan.
Rather than being about drinking and getting rowdy, organisers really wanted this rodeo to focus on community, horsemanship and family. Father and son duo Damon and Tyrell Metcalf had the opportunity to compete against each other in the open bull riding for the first time in a few years, and it was pretty special.
Yeah, I ended up second in open bull ride after no ride for three years. Yeah, so I just made a comeback because I was trying to, you know, coach Ty how to ride him. So, yeah, yeah. Entered me up and, yeah, I had to show him, he told me. So I showed him.
And what did you place, do you know?
Nah, bucked off today, unfortunately, but I drew a good bull and Abdullah, and he got me down once again. But, round three, I guess.
So what's it like competing with your son?
Yeah, it was good.
Especially when you win.
Yeah. So I'll be able to rub it a little bit into him, you know, give him a bit of shit about it. But it's all part of the game. But, yeah, we want, you know, want our son to be, you know, champions as well. So, yeah, got to give it to him, yeah.
And it does, it must run in the family because you also had your uncle here as well. He's quite well known in this space, isn't he?
Yeah, Uncle Luke Metcalf. He's competed for over, you know, nearly 30 years now in bull riding and bareback riding here in Western Australia. He's travelled around Australia and been to America and Canada there. And he's a good role model for me, and it's good him alongside Dad as well.
The rodeo's name, Kalayura, is also culturally significant for Brian Tucker, and he says it's all about bringing people of all backgrounds together.
If you think about what is Kalayura, Kalayura is a firefly that comes up from my country called the Karijiri National Park, and that's my father's name. And with that, Kalayura firefly is... It's a red little dragonfly that flies around over water. And we all tend to like water in all walks of life. And it's an important message to everybody. And I think Kalayura makes it all happen because you can easily distinguish itself.
That was Brian Tucker, Kalayura director and a traditional owner on Bunjima country in Western Australia. He was speaking with Georgia Hargraves. That is all the time we have on the Country Hour this afternoon. My name's Fiona Broom. Great to have had your company today. If you missed that mango news at the start of the show, you can catch up on the podcast. Just look for the NT Country Hour podcast on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm going to dance out to this one, take you up to 1:30. My name's Fiona Broom. I'll catch you tomorrow.